This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome to another episode of Mom in Mind. I am your host, Dr. Kat. I appreciate that you are showing up here today to learn and listen to another story, personal experience through really difficult pregnancy and postpartum times. For those of you who've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that there are so many ways in which mental health conditions impact the reproductive journey through fertility, through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, and beyond if left untreated or unchecked or unsupported. And that is also true for pregnancy loss at any time of pregnancy. And our guest today, Megan Mons, is sharing with us her story of recurrent miscarriage, mental health challenges during pregnancy and postpartum, as well as self-advocacy and empowerment during pregnancy and postpartum. Megan fills many roles, but most important to her is her role as a mother to her two small children, ages 5 and 3. Megan is a highly sensitive person who works as a mental health therapist for children, adults, and families. She has a passion for working with children and adults with complex trauma histories, and Megan has her own lived experience with anxiety, depression, and trauma. She has lived through recurrent miscarriages and hopes that her story will validate and empower others experiencing their own journey and challenges with parenthood. And again, those of you who listen to this podcast know how empowering it is to know that you're not alone and to hear stories from other people who have really been through it. And each person's journey, while there might be some similarities that connect us all, it's also very unique to that person and their life experience and their history and their current life context. And each time we hear somebody's story, we learn a little bit more about how perinatal mental health conditions can affect somebody, but I think we also learn a little bit more about ourselves. If any of you have been through any perinatal mental health condition, you know you can hear a little bit of yourself in most people's stories. It's really, really powerful to be able to relate to each other in this way, and I thank Megan for coming on. So let's welcome Megan. Welcome, Megan. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm really happy that you're coming on to share your experience, specifically since you are aware of your high sensitivity as a person and as a mother. I think it brings a really important depth to understanding what goes on for highly sensitive folks in the parenting journey, and specifically with, you know, what you're describing. You know, we talk a lot about high sensitivity here. So yeah, your story is very welcome, and I appreciate you for coming. So please do start wherever you're comfortable.
Yeah. So I think, you know, every mother's story is unique. as I was reflecting on, you know, the things that I wanted to say or share, one of the things that stuck out for me was I just have this repeated experience of filling out like medical paperwork. Mm. And the questions are always like, how many pregnancies have you had? And then how many children do you have? Mm-hmm. And my answer to the pregnancy question is 5 pregnancies. And my answer to the children question is 2. And there's often like some awkward, weird pause when people are reading that. And so that's just one of the like unique experiences that I have that I think, well, I know not everybody has. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, what I wanted to share is my experience of having 3 recurrent miscarriages mm-hmm. before having 2 successful births. Mm-hmm. So I'll just tell my story.
Yeah.
See, I was married at 29, I believe, and we waited a year to start trying to conceive. And actually it happened pretty easily, pretty quickly. And at the time I was working for child protection, which as you know, is a very high stress, intense job.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of like all I ever knew. I tend to thrive under stress and pressure, mm-hmm. and probably has something to do with my temperament and also maybe some of the things that I've experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, high stress job. I was promoted pretty quickly to a supervisory role, which now in retrospect, I'm like, I don't know if that was a really good idea for me, but mm-hmm. nonetheless, it happened. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. yeah, so I got pregnant and, you know, went through all the normal things, like the first doctor's appointments and things like that. And then when I went in for my first ultrasound, they found that there was no heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And I still remember like all of the details of that. It was not on my radar, you know? You know, we talk about miscarriage and I feel like try to normalize it, but for mm-hmm. some reason it was in my mind, it was like, oh, not me. Mm-hmm. Like that mm-hmm. happened to me. I'd always wanted to be a mom. Like there was never a question. And I was waiting, you know, waiting to get married and couldn't wait to start trying to have kids. And my husband was like a little bit slower to the idea. So for me, I mean, for him too, but it was pretty devastating. Mm-hmm. And I remember the follow-up appointments to that ultrasound. I remember going in and I remember I had my hood on. I was wearing my sweatshirt. I was all in cozy clothes and I had my hood on. And I remember the doctor saying like, you're handling this very well. And I just was like, yeah, I am, I guess. But like really on the
inside, what does
that mean? Numb. Like I'm not handling anything. I'm just on autopilot here, you know? Okay. So that was like my first like recognition of just the weird experience and like how alone you feel. I'm like, how can you like, it was just confusing to me. Mm-hmm, how can mm-hmm. you tell me I'm as well? Like, first of all, is that even a thing?
Right.
People handle it well? I don't know. Not my experience and not mm-hmm. in the experience of other women I've connected with. So that first one was very intense. I had no idea how to navigate it. I think that my primary coping tools were avoidance. So I was working that full-time job. I was also coaching gymnastics. I was a high school gymnastics coach. And so very mm-hmm. much like focused outwardly on all the things except for myself. And I mean, there was nothing, no complications or anything like that. I guess the only thing that I felt was kind of crappy for me was that my body didn't dispel it naturally. So I had mm-hmm. to have medical intervention for that, which mm-hmm. was kind of challenging. Mm-hmm. And so over the next 2 years, it happened twice again. I feel like with everyone, I was like more prepared and like knew what to expect. And so I'll like, not that it wasn't emotionally painful. It was, mm-hmm. but it wasn't as like jarring because I'd done it before, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as I was reflecting on my experience, the topic of trauma has been a pretty significant part of it. So I have some early childhood trauma and, you know, one of the key components of that is like feeling helpless and feeling like something is happening to you. Mm-hmm. And it was my experience with miscarriage that it was just like, it was happening to me and there was mm-hmm. nothing to stop it. And that just felt like I almost felt like it was like re-traumatizing in a way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, of course, I was so happy and grateful to eventually be able to have a successful birth. But even in my first birth, those same feelings were there. Yeah. So it was a few year span. I had 3 recurrent miscarriages. And then finally, I switched jobs and moved into, I was still in a social work role, but it was much less high stress. I was working in a hospital. And while I was there, I was able to conceive again and successfully carry out my pregnancy. And it was wonderful and I'm grateful. And it also was really hard because of my experience with miscarriage. I couldn't really connect to my baby. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. I enjoyed the experience of being pregnant. Like I loved that. I loved how I felt. I was sleeping well, all those things, but I didn't have that connection. And so mm-hmm. I think that for me and my experience, that lack of connection really impacted my birth experience. Right. So again, it felt like things were happening to me. And I feel like part of, you know, like healthy interpersonal relationships is like consensual. And I feel like since I didn't have a connection with this little being, like we weren't giving consent for this process happening. Uh-huh. Kind of like abstract, but it felt so real.
Yeah.
So I did okay. I mean, it wasn't part of my plan, which now looking back, like, I don't know that having this like really structured plan was the best thing for me, but I did because I was young and naive. So I ended up being induced and then that was really intense.
The part of your plan was the induction or was not the induction?
No, okay. No, I wanted this like supernatural uh-huh. birth and my mom had had 3 natural births. And so, mm-hmm. you know, there's like maybe a little bit of like familiar pressure for that.
Yeah. Yep.
I thought I wanted that and that was not it. It was like a lot of medical intervention. I spent so much time at the hospital. I was, induced. I had an epidural. The baby came out just fine. And that was so good, but it really felt like it was happening to me.
Right.
So, and I didn't, you know, I just had this fear that she was going to die like through my whole pregnancy. And I know mm-hmm. that sounds like intense. And when I say that to people, they're like, whoa, but it was so real for me. And like, until she was in my hands, like,
yes.
I thought she was going to be taken from me.
Yeah, and that's understandable given what you had already been through. It's hard to sort of get over the hump of imagining that actually getting the baby that you want when you've had that experience 3 times already that they'd been taken from you.
Yeah, and it almost felt like to not prepare for that would be like emotionally irresponsible. Mm-hmm. I had to prepare for the worst because I had experienced that a few times. I was very hypervigilant through that first pregnancy. Like
yeah.
now looking back on the things that I was worried about, I have mm-hmm. a little bit of like embarrassment. So for example, my daughter, her name's Georgia. She had the hiccups all the time mm-hmm. in utero. And like, I thought that was something bad. And I remember mm-hmm. calling the doctor being like, she has the hiccups again. And the person on the other side on the other line was like, fetuses get hiccups. And I'm like, oh, okay. This is clearly like an anxiety response that I'm having, but nobody's like naming that.
This podcast is supported by Factor. If you want stress-free and ready-to-eat meals for you and your family, then Factor it is. These meals are fresh and crafted by chefs, and all of that means that in 2 minutes, you can be eating a quality meal that you can really taste because it's never been frozen. You just heat and serve. Yesterday for lunch, I had the honey mustard chicken with green beans and potatoes, and it was so full of flavor. And it was also just the right amount of food to keep me going for the day and feeling good with the amount of protein that I needed. And what's cool is I'm going out of town for a little bit, and it was really easy to put the delivery on pause and set it up for when I return. Head to factormeals.com/momandmind50 and use code momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code momandmind50 at factormeals.com/momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, 2 moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly,
wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking it. So, I mean, at that point, was it clear to you, or did it feel like anxiety to you, or did it, do you know what I mean? Like, was, do you, did you have an awareness at the time that it was anxiety, or no, not really?
Like later into the pregnancy I did, and that mm-hmm. was kind of far along, but I don't think I realized it early on, which is a little bit strange because I tend to be an anxious person, but I always felt that like pregnancy and motherhood was this thing that I was going to like be able to naturally do. And so I guess maybe I felt like untouchable in that area, but that wasn't the case. Mm. Yeah. So, and then even after I had Georgia, I like those feelings were still there. I mean, I remember having some really intense conversations with my husband. Like my expectation was that one of us was like up all the time with her, because I felt like if we weren't there caring for her, something bad was going to happen. And it was just unrealistic. You know, parents have to sleep.
Yeah, for sure. But it, maybe to your point, like it doesn't necessarily feel unrealistic. It feels like a real worry that everybody should be attending to.
Mm-hmm. And then also I had had that background in child protection and, you know, as they should be, they're very fear-based and there's a lot of conversation about infant death. And so, you know, I think I brought that element too, which my husband did not have. And so there was, you know, there was some tension there. After Georgia was born, I mean, the emotions are, you know, strong. I think I had guilt for not connecting with her, worries about how that was going to impact her in the long run. You know, mm-hmm. I listen to all these podcasts and read these books and talk, you know, they talk about like maternal stress and pregnancy and the impact mm-hmm. of all that. So mm-hmm. all of that was just running through my mind. So she was so adorable and I loved mm-hmm. her so much. And I'm so glad that we were able to connect, because not having a connection during all of that would have been really intense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right, already kind of feeling that disconnection during pregnancy is hard enough. So any time where you don't feel the connection is hard. But to your point and your experience that you described earlier, that like sort of consent thing, in terms of like babies, they have one way of telling you something, and that's crying when they're little. So it's hard to like decipher and differentiate what that is. But if you have a connection, that feels a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, it's felt safety, you know, I didn't have that until after she was born, and that's okay. I mean, it turned out fine. She's thriving. Mm-hmm. But it was really intense. And again, I think that, my earlier experience of trauma, and maybe I don't want to say I hadn't done the work, because I've been in therapy for a long time, but like the work wasn't yet to the trauma work, my work wasn't yet to a point where it was resolved enough for it to not be re-traumatizing.
Right.
So I continued to do work. I saw a therapist. I brought Georgia to my therapist with me after she was born, and I continued to do work. And 2 years after, well, I had my son when Georgia was exactly 23 months. Mm-hmm. So I feel like because I had the opportunity to parent her and like that postpartum period, I felt like I could do it and it was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Whereas pregnancy just didn't feel like that for me. But so I was able to show up as a parent and like meet her needs and be with her and create that connection and all those mm-hmm. things that I wanted to do. And that felt really good. And so I feel like because I was able to do that, I was also able to continue doing this like therapeutic work myself.
Oh, got it.
Going into my pregnancy with my son, I just felt so much more whole more healthy, more understanding of all the things that I had experienced, and much more willing, I would say, to like assert myself and come at pregnancy and birth and postpartum from a place of empowerment rather than feeling really unseen and confused and disoriented, quite frankly. So that was a really good experience.
Yeah, that's, it sounds very different than pregnancy with your daughter versus pregnancy with your son. Were you able to feel connection during pregnancy?
I was. Yeah.
It's great that you were able to have a second go at it where you could feel the things that you had wanted to feel. And I don't know how it impacted you to have those two different sets of feelings. Like, for instance, sometimes people feel like, oh, I wish I could have had this with my daughter too. Or even sometimes guilt or all kinds of feelings can come up when they don't feel like they were the same.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my kids are pretty close in age. And so there's already this, I don't know, awareness you have of like making sure that you're connected with both of them and you're not favoring one and there's not competition. And I think that complexity is part of my experience. And, you know, I do look at my pregnancy with my daughter and wish that maybe it had gone different, but also I learned so much and I just have a lot of compassion for my former self, you know,
and
we did it, you know, we got through it. So I don't know. I'm not like a person who really like has a lot of regrets because it's just life and you get through it.
Yeah. But
I think compassion is kind of where I go.
That's awesome. I'm so glad. And I'm glad you're bringing that in too, because, you know, some people do struggle with wishing things had gone differently, but there is some amount of acceptance that it sounds like you've become comfortable with and or worked on anyways to be able to get to that point that it was what it was for that pregnancy. So for the pregnancy, birth, and postpartum with your son, what are some other ways that it felt different to you as opposed to your daughter's experience?
Yeah. So the experience with my daughter was a little bit complex. I don't want to undermine the medical professionals because I do trust them and appreciate them. I also wonder whether my level of anxiety and stress around pregnancy influenced some of the care decisions, specifically to be induced, because I hadn't even yet made it to my due date. And the reasoning given for the induction was that she was small. And she was 6'4" when she was born, which, I mean, that's small, but not like compared to, you know, I mean, there's much smaller babies that are born that are totally safe. And so I can never like say that was the wrong decision, right? Because she came out healthy. But I just wonder if my level of anxiety like influenced that at all, because I had all the worries, like her hiccups and whatever, all the other things. And so when I had my son, like I said, I was feeling much more empowered, certainly less anxious, more connected already with this baby. And I went into labor on my own and I was able to labor mostly at home. He was born without a lot of intervention and it just felt so much more peaceful. And that's how I would describe it. Just peaceful. And like, it was me and him and it was about this connection and it was really beautiful. Whereas my daughter's, it was raw and intense. And I think, and the postpartum period too, again, like I trusted myself. We had this successful birth. It felt really good. I didn't feel like it happened to me. I felt like I was like, I consented to participation. Right. And so in postpartum, I felt like I was able to make decisions based on my own motherly intuition versus kind of, I don't want to say people pleasing, but like putting the decisions in the hands of the people around me. And one example of that is, I think all hospitals probably offer the breastfeeding services, support to new mothers. But I really needed to just focus on my connection with my baby and like learn him and let him learn me. And I felt that those services actually was like a stressful and a distraction to my experience. And so I declined that. I did it once and then I was like, thank you. And no, thank you. And that felt good. Like I got this and I'll reach out if I don't, you know? So yeah, just felt much more empowered and much more based on my needs and our connection and what I knew was healthy for us.
Yeah, absolutely. That does give you a whole lot more space to think. Right. I mean, it can be hard to know what you need and what you don't need with the first sometimes, not always, but sometimes. But just that idea that you can say no or no, not right now. It's hard to know that when it's your first time experience or if somebody didn't explicitly tell you that you can do that or anything, but that's so important to be able to like you're saying, going back to consent. Sometimes people just come in and do what they think needs to be done. But when you can say no, thank you, it gives you a lot more space to figure things out how you want to. It's really powerful. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you had that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you were able to kind of learn a lot from your previous experience and take that into the pregnancy, birth, postpartum with your son. And it doesn't sound, I mean, from what I heard anyways, it doesn't sound like you experienced the same kind of angst or anxiety.
No. I think the typical physiological changes, like I was aware of those. We've talked about high sensitivity. I'm very aware of my body and changes in it. But it wasn't sending me into like a stress response. It was like, oh, I know what this is. Like, this is normal. Mm. Or, you know, maybe use a coping strategy or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So, right. Going back to the first pregnancy, then was it harder to differentiate than like an anxious response versus a high sensitivity?
Yeah. I think that most things were landing for me as a threat. Yeah. So I am very sensitive by nature, notice things, and that's not a bad thing. I love being sensitive, but when you're sensitive and you're feeling super anxious or you're having like a trauma response, it can be really intense because every little thing lands as dangerous for your system. And I would say that the people around me didn't catch that.
Providers or family members or everyone?
Yeah, providers. Well, and also, I think that there are some of us who are really good at like portraying that we're okay when really maybe we're not. And I didn't know with the pregnancy thing, I didn't know any other experience, right? So I kind of just was like, well, I guess for somebody who's had a miscarriage, I guess this is just what pregnancy is. But since I've had those experiences, I have talked to other women and maybe their miscarriage was like, maybe the impact of their miscarriage was like sad and grief, but it wasn't necessarily this like super heightened stress response, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? That part where it feels like, oh, this must be how everybody feels. It's so easy to feel that way. And at the same time I don't know if you experienced this, but like feeling alone at the same time. It's a weird, I don't know the word for it, not dichotomy, but it's a weird set of feelings to have where you, it's almost like a discounting can feel like in some ways of your own experience, like, well, this just must be how it is. And so I have to deal with it. And so I can't talk about it or tell anyone.
Yeah, just suck it up, you know. And for me, it's like you've always been the strong one. Like, this is no difference. You just are different. You just need to put one foot in front of the other and like keep going. And so I did. And then the other complexity I would say of being a highly sensitive person is that I'm very sensitive and in tune to other people's emotions. And like, I'm a caretaker by nature and by profession, right? And so I think that I have like, I've done a lot of work around this, but maybe this like habitual response to caretake others. And when you've experienced, you know, recurrent miscarriage, like naturally people have feelings about that. And what I could feel coming from people was a whole lot of pity And I really struggled with that. Like, yeah, I did. Like, I didn't know what to do with that. Like, it was so intense. And I would just feel like, I'm like, okay, I'm the one suffering here, but you are suffering too, because you have your own feelings about what this would be like. And I totally get that, but I can't, like, my then habitual behavior would be to abandon myself and like try to take care of this other person, you know, that was there to support me. And that didn't feel safe or like it was working for me. So then I just was like, well, I'll just kind of stay to myself then, rather than feeling all of that. So I just like kept things to myself as much as I could.
Oof, yeah. Yeah. That's hard. And then it sounds like there's a bit of overlap between, as you were saying, some like trauma that you were trying to work through, and also some parts of sensitivity kind of intermingling there. It's really hard to know what's what and how to attend to it when it just feels all of it overwhelming. Were there other ways that you recognize now, anyways, about how the high sensitivity impacted you in either the pregnancy with your daughter or with your son, pregnancy, birth, and postpartum?
I mean, obviously, the emotional experience is just really intense. Not just the negative experience, but like the positive too. Like, oh my gosh, it was all so deep for me. And I think one element that, I don't know if this is my high sensitivity per se, or just because of my experience with the recurrent miscarriage, but like, I really understand the blessing it is to like be able to parent, you know, like, like every milestone, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I get to do this. Like, I'm so lucky, because I almost wasn't able to, you know? And so sometimes little things can feel really overwhelming to me, like in a good way, but some of my friends are like, okay, girl, like she just, whatever she just did, like she just ate out of a, I don't know. She just, what would be an example of that? Like she just picked out her own outfit, like not that big of a deal. And I'm like, but it is. And then I think the other piece of high sensitivity is like, sensory wise, I'm very sensitive. And so that first birth where there was all this like intervention and chaos and stimulation, like that wasn't good for my system. The lights were too bright. The people were touching me. The metal stuff was cold. Like it just was too much. And so with my second pregnancy, I was able to say like, I want the lights off. I don't want you in my room. Don't talk to me. One funny thing that happened with my first pregnancy is that my husband was in there, and it was the middle of the night, and he opened a can of Red Bull next to me. And he said that he's never seen me look at him like that. Like, like you get that and that smell out of my room. So another thing, like he knew, like, don't be bringing in any like Red Bull or anything. Right, with the wrong smell. Like I need everything like peaceful, and like, I need you to leave me alone.
Well, that's right. It's so nice to be able to manage your environment. And I would say that's another thing that people aren't totally aware that they can do or ask for. Like simple things like turning down the lights or off the lights. That plus other things could really make a difference.
And asking for minimal contact. Like my birth experience was that I had to get in this sort of like mental zone or mental state. And like, so any interruption, it just made it harder, you know? So I'm like, unless there's something dangerous happening, like, of course, please interrupt my mental state, but otherwise, like, please let me, you know, go through my process. And I mean, little things too, just like you can be sensitive and things can be really hard for you. But I feel like part of high sensitivity is that like small things also make a really big difference. So like, I wore my own robe instead of wearing that hospital gown, you know, and it's like little things like that were really impactful. So,
yeah absolutely. So it sounds like there are some other things we could talk about for sure about empowerment. And I'd like to get back to that in just a moment. But first, considering the whole of your experience of like your reproductive experience that you shared from miscarriage through birth and postpartum, what are some of the things that you really want people to know about in terms of mental health and getting the support that you need?
Yeah, well, I think the element of earlier trauma is really important to consider. And I think many of us, when we're in our reproductive years, haven't done all of the work. And so what I would say is like, I wasn't aware of how deep and like the threat of trauma and the impact of that in pregnancy, miscarriage, of course, birth, postpartum, like it was so real and there was no conversation about it. And I think that, you know, we talked about feeling isolated. Like I was surrounded by people, but really isolated with that piece of it and without language until I started really diving into that deeper with my own therapist. So yeah, just considering your unique history and like how the impact of that might show up in the whole pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experience. Mm-hmm. And I would say if you have the means, maybe establishing a therapeutic relationship prior to all of that so that you can at least begin to ask some questions about how you might have been impacted.
Yeah.
And then the other piece is that, especially for people who've experienced like early childhood trauma, I think a lot of us go into this place of like hyper independence, like I got this kind of thing. I can get through anything. And part of that, I think sometimes is putting on this face that you're high functioning and you can do it and you don't need anybody else. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the response, but that's not necessarily the truth. That's the coping mechanism, you know?
Right.
And so what I would say is if you're a person, a provider, a partner, a family member, a friend of somebody who's experiencing or going through the process of conception or has experienced a miscarriage or is in pregnancy or, about to give birth, just somehow letting them know that maybe that they don't have to be as strong as they think that they need to be, or just acknowledging that like, wow, you know, like you're going through this big thing and you're still showing up for work. Like that's noteworthy, right? Like they might feel safe to let that coping mechanism go because it's like help them. But I think at least acknowledging it can, be impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
And when you were saying that, it reminded me of what that initial provider said to you about like, you're dealing with this really well, or you're coping with this really well. Like, it is hard to know how somebody feels. It might look like you were saying on the outside one thing, but ooh, there's so much happening internally. And it's really, and I'm not saying this was your experience, but I know from other folks I've talked to, is that sometimes when you hear a comment like you're handling this well, it can make you feel like, oh, this is how I'm supposed to be handling this. Mm-hmm. And then anything that feels different than that can feel terrible. So it's like very important to not make that assumption about how somebody's doing, because you just don't know from the outside.
And also I would say, like, if you're a support person, like, be prepared and accept that you might do it wrong, and that's okay. You mm-hmm. know, because like, mm-hmm. like somebody could have said the perfect thing to me, but I was in a place, you know, mm-hmm. and so maybe I rejected them. But that doesn't mean that like a year down the line, I might look at that experience and be like, oh, like they were there for me, even though mm-hmm. I was in this really dark place or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so not to like, is it okay to move into the empowerment piece?
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Because it's on the topic of what you said about not making assumptions and how sometimes like when you do receive that feedback, you kind of get this impression that like it should be done this certain way. Like you should handle it this way. And I actually took notes on some of the things that I would hope for other women. And one of those is have you ever heard of the book, Wild Power?
No, I haven't.
It's called Wild Power, Discover the Magic of Your Menstrual Cycle and Awaken the Feminine Path to Power. And it's a book on menstrual cycle awareness. And it's really good. I read it actually when I was pregnant with my daughter. But one of their key points in this book is something that they call the Big Red Rule. Mm. And they say that your experience trumps anything that they might say. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's so important to acknowledge that, like, you know, the provider or your partner might think that it should be this certain way. I mean, someone might say like, well, at least, you know, you could get pregnant. And it's like, so, like my experience is my experience, regardless of whether you understand it. And that is totally okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's really powerful. Hard to do, but very, sometimes hard to do, but ooh, that's a super important one.
Well, I think for me, after my first, after the miscarriages, when I was pregnant, I was having a conversation with my provider and letting her know that I felt that like that high stress environment that I was working in when I was working for child protection probably impacted my ability to carry a successful pregnancy. And I remember her telling me like, there's no research to show that stress like impacts pregnancy or something. And I just was like, okay,
But there is
my experience and who are you doing your research on, you know, like,
and also, but there is,
I mean, that was helpful feedback, but it was just one of those moments where I was like, okay,
not helpful.
Share my personal experience here because research supposedly doesn't support my experience.
Right. And like, that's a tough one, as if there's research on everything.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, well, you don't have research on my body and my experience and my personal history. Anyway, so that's one thing is the Big Red Rule. Your experience trumps anything that anybody else, any feedback that anyone's giving you or their experiences, that's great for them, but that doesn't have to be your experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Yeah. Thank you for that one.
Yeah. So in addition to the Big Red Rule, another couple of things that I would offer to people. One of them is, this is on the topic of being highly sensitive, is that it's totally okay if your needs and preferences don't make sense to anyone else. And that there actually, at least in my experience, there actually was a lot of space for me to be able to communicate those and to ask for things. It's not always, those options aren't always offered on like the front end, but I would say that in the instances where I was able to ask for what I need, like for the most part, people wanted to accommodate those, you know?
Nice. That can be hard, especially like you're saying, if you're not sure if it'll make sense to somebody else that will be received well. I mean, I feel like it can make it hard to even put it out there.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the strategies that I use was just to call that out at the beginning. Like I'd be like, I know this sounds weird, or I know this might not make sense to you, but I need X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, kind of when it seems like when you acknowledge it at the very beginning, people are like, oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. That's such a great tool. It really is. Cause it dispels any kind of like confusion that they might have. And also probably prevents from a lot of like, well, why do you need that? And
I think it takes the burden off of them to feel like they have to figure, like you don't have to figure it out.
Yeah. You already figured it out.
Yeah. I did that work, you know? Mm-hmm. So just knowing that, your needs and preferences and the things that you find supportive don't have to make sense to anyone else. The third strategy that I used, with my second birth was, I think I was able to access this because I had done a lot of work around the anxiety and the trauma stuff. Mm-hmm. But coming at those experiences from a place of curiosity mm-hmm. rather than control. So I would, you know, like I had my idea of what, like how I wanted things to go or like ideally what they would be, but I felt like it was more important to embody that curiosity. Like, I wonder what this birth is going to be like. I wonder what mode of like feeding is going to work best for my son and for me, you know? Because when I came in with, I would say more rigid expectations, and I think probably a need for control because of what I was going through, birth doesn't go like that. Postpartum doesn't go like that.
Yeah.
So it felt like a smoother transition, and I was able to adjust a little bit easier when I came at it from a place of curiosity rather than mm-hmm. or the need to control.
Yeah. I mean, that these are spot on, so important. I think especially for high sensitivity, but really for anybody to have the flexibility with yourself that you're not going to know and ahead of time necessarily what you need or what baby needs. It just helps so much to avoid feelings of failure when you don't or can't meet those initial expectations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much good in there. Those are really great points for advocating for yourself and feeling more empowered in the process as well.
Yeah.
Well, on those notes that are really, really, really important, I want to thank you for bringing all of this in. I know there are a lot of parents who will benefit from this conversation and from your really helpful insights to how sensitivity can impact someone, and furthermore, how trauma in its various forms can impact someone, and just really how to have that compassion for yourself. I really hear that in how you've learned to cope and manage in your own journey. And I hear that coming through for other parents as well. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
Please do get connected with Megan at Megan Mons Counseling on Instagram. For those of you who are listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, do go to the ratings section and give us a star or five. Let us know how much you appreciate this podcast and what it has done for you or somebody that you love. These ratings really help us be able to be found by others who are looking for resources. And once again, thank you so much for being with us. Until next time.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Please share this podcast. Together we can support moms and families so that no one has to deal with this alone. Come connect with us at momandmind.com.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.